All right, good afternoon. Education Finance Committee will come to order. So we should have minutes in your packets. Let me pull those out. Let's see, Representative Quam, if you've had a chance to review the minutes, if you'd like to move their adoption.
So moved.
All right, Representative Quam moves adoption of the minutes from the April 7th meeting. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, minutes adopted. Thank you, Representative Quam. All right, members, as you know, today we'll be doing a walkthrough of my delete all amendment for the Education Finance Omnibus Supplemental Bill. And so we'll have nonpartisan staff walk through that for everyone in detail. We can ask questions and things that you may be wondering about. It wasn't my intention today to take public testimony unless we run out of questions and have time before 2:30. Basically, the plan is that tomorrow, Wednesday's committee, will be devoted to public testimony, and I will be establishing an amendment filing deadline of 5 o'clock Wednesday, so you'll have until 5 o'clock tomorrow if you choose to file amendments to this delete all. And then Thursday, we will move to amendment of the bill. So we won't be moving any amendments today. It'll just be complete walkthrough, discussion, questions, and that from committee members. And in your packets, and they are, for members of the public, we've had a little crisis in duplicating. They are working on producing more copies. There was some there, and they disappeared, so they're making some more. But you should have in your packets a copy of the delete all. We do have also the summary from Mr. Strom and Ms. Larson. There is also the run of the equity revenue, so by district, so what the impact of that provision would be, which is in the delete all. But I miss any other components. So spreadsheets? Tracking sheet is in there. So I think we have all the components that we would expect for looking at a omnibus supplemental finance bill. So with that, I just want to say a few things about what's in the delete all amendment, which we will hear all about in just a minute. So a few things. First, that the delete all overall, we leverage about $55 million and tried to put those into what I believe or hope would be our committee and our members' collective education finance priorities. There's $16.8 million in grants contained within this proposal to support students with direct services or enhanced teacher training. $14.6 million is devoted to increasing the supply of new and diverse teachers and to provide for continuing education for current teachers. $9.4 million is for things like broadband access, career and technology, and adult education. There's $6 million to support early childhood learning and literacy, $7.7 million to end a disparity that exists in revenue between metro and non-metro school districts. And we also have some other provisions where we really were looking for some common ground with the governor. So there's nearly $14 million in combined initiatives aligned to recommendations that were in the governor's proposal. And those specifically are $6 million for future teacher grants and paraprofessional Grow Your Own programs, $2.75 million for the Positive Behavioral Interventions and Support Program, $240,000 to fix a department error in calculating and distributing QCOMP for fiscal year 16, and most of these things we heard testimony on, $120,000 for GED testing access in fiscal year 17, and also $69,000 to fund the Metro Deaf Early Learning preschool. There's also the policy bill that's part of this proposal. These includes the policy bill, House File 3066, and many of the governor's policy requests were in that policy bill as well, which we had a brief walkthrough on last week. Also included is my teacher safety and student discipline bill, or the teacher safety bill and the student discipline working group, two different proposals, but they are both in here and proposing to give teachers the authority to run their classrooms and also taking a deeper look at discipline issues in our schools through the working group. Early learning coordination at the school district level will allow districts to use their ECFE and school readiness funds to craft early learning programs that work best for their individual communities. We aim to provide more local control of revenue to meet local needs and priorities. And then the education licensing account with direct appropriations to the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators, consistent with recommendations of the OLA report, is in this proposal. And finally, we leave teacher retention policies to the collective bargaining table and local control. So with that, those brief sort of an overview, we'll turn it over to nonpartisan staff to do a thorough walkthrough and explanation of the delete all. And who is, all right, so Ms. Johnson's going to go first. Ms. Johnson.
Yep. Madam Chair and members, before I get into the detail of the spreadsheet, I wanted to just give you a really high-level overview of what you're looking at. There's lots of numbers and columns and rows on this spreadsheet, so I wanted to just give you high-level understanding. The columns from left to right are the fiscal years. In the first column, column A, you'll see the FY14-15. That was the biennial total for that. And then columns B through I reference the governor's proposal, so you'll be able to compare and contrast the where the similarities are between the House bill and the governor's bill. And then on columns J through Q are the House proposals, and specifically we'll be looking most closely at columns J through M, and in particular column M, because for budgeting purposes the forecast is the base, and any changes to base are reflected in column M, and so you should follow that column closely as I walk through the spreadsheet.
And Ms. Johnson, I mean, it's just because I had to listen carefully. M as in Mary?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. I wasn't sure if I heard M or N. Thank you.
Okay. So, and then as the as you go work through the...
Ms. Johnson, would you suspend? Representative Murphy.
Before we go any further, Madam Chair, is that the 11:20 a.m. spreadsheet?
Yep, it's a long one.
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, and then as you work through the columns throughout the six pages of the spreadsheet, these align closely to the articles that are in the bill. So Article 1 is the general education, Article 2, education excellence, and so forth throughout the bill. So that kind of gives you just a general overview of what you're looking at. And one more final detail in general about the spreadsheet. I did include, as of this version, a little bit more detail about what's in the general education program. Usually it's all rolled up into a very large number, about $6.6 million annually. And in an effort to give a little more and more information, because there are a number of pieces related to general education, like compensatory, sparsity, equity, ELL, small schools, a whole bunch of different programs. This helps to just give a little context about where the major components are. So about $5.6 million for the formula aid, that's the $5,948 that goes out on a per pupil basis statewide. That's the lion's share, and then there's compensatory. These are the largest components, and then all of the other ones are contained on line 13. So that's just a general overview about some details. But with regard to the House's proposal, as you know, the target for our budget is zero. But there, as the chair mentioned, there is some savings of about $52 million that we were able to capture, so that we would be able to put some money into the priorities of the House. So if you take a look at line 18 is the first House proposal. This is the Glenville Emmons fix. This was a school district that had a ballot error in their how they were reporting or how when the effective date would be. And so this is a technical correction. So we allowed them to levy, and the aid component of that is $36,000 for FY17. And then because the district is able to levy in the future, the portion that is that they will levy in the out years is $100,000. And so for each of those years, the operating capital equalization is increased just a little bit. So everyone's operating capital equalization will be increased so that we have a net zero levy target. it's kind of confusing, but there's a lot to that. And then there's the next line is the equity bump for non-metro districts. This is Representative Baker's bill. This would provide all districts or districts in the metro area when their equity aid is equity revenue is being calculated is gets a 25% bump, and this bill would provide that all non-metro districts would also receive that 25% bump, and so that is a cost of $7.7 million starting in FY17. Oh, because in FY17 it is a aid and local levy program, but in the first year in FY17 we're providing it all in aid, so that's 7.7, and then in the out years then it'll be about 3.2 million in aid, and then there's also a levy component. So and next change item is on line around line 44, Q comp adjustment. That was the governor's recommendation to correct for a couple of districts that were inadvertently bumped out of eligibility for FY16, and so they are included at a cost of about $240,000. The second to last column on the page is reading core grants. This is Representative Bennett's bill. This is a one-time increase for the reading core. There is a base of 6.125 for FY17, but we are adding an additional one-time $1.5 million. Line 56 is the Rock and Read grant, and this is Representative Seltzer's bill, and that is a one-time pilot grant of $100,000. Turning to the next page, just a short way down, there's Q grants. This is also a ongoing program that has been a long-established program, but the House's proposal is to have a $2 million one-time bump or infusion of grant money, and this is Representative Fenton's bill, so that would be $2 million additional for that.
Excuse me, what number? Line number?
64, I have. I might have, unfortunately, a slightly different number, so I'll kind of reference the number and that around it. So that was the 64 Q grant in that area. Okay, and then Madam Chair, members, the next change item is on mine is line 79, the Northwest Regional Partnership Continuing Education. This was Representative Norness's bill. This would be that partnership with Morehead State University for continuing ed for teachers that teach concurrent enrollment. The next line is concurrent enrollment. This was Representative Pearson's bill, and at $750,000 per year, and this would be more of a statewide effort for those teachers that aren't in that Northwest area, and this is a one-time funding. The next line item is Grow Your Own Residency Pilot. This was Representative Fenton's bill, and that provides $1.5 million on a one-time basis. The next item is Minnesota Future Teachers Grants. This was a governor's initiative that was included at is funded here at $4.5 million. The Special Education Paralicensing was Representative Swadzinski's bill, and that is a one-time pilot for Southwest State at $385,000 for special ed paraprofessional licensing. Line 84, the teacher shortage loan forgiveness. This is Representative Bennett's bill at $1 million, and that's a one-time. The next is the student teaching stipend grants to compensate students who are student teaching and have that unpaid time when they're doing their student teaching. So this provides a stipend on a one-time basis. Another initiative that the House has adopted as well is the Statewide Educator Job Board that was recommended to have one-stop shop for all licensing for administrators and educators in the state, and that would be $239,000. The next line is line 87, Mentoring Partnerships. This was the Santa Foundation. This is a one-time appropriation of $1.5 million. And along with that, the next line is Girls in Action. This is Representative Moran's bill at $1.5 million for FY17. The next line is PBIS. This was the governor's recommendation as well. That's at $2.75 million for 1 year. Next line, intermediate co-ops training. This is for Chair Loon's bill that had the the one-time professional development revenue for the intermediate districts that serve really difficult populations. The next line, 91, school-linked mental health grants. This was Representative Dabney's bill. This would be a $5 million appropriation. And the school crisis response team is the next one. That's Representative Twombs. That's funded at $100,000 for FY17. And then Representative Keel's bill, the mobile technology lab, is funded at $900,000 for FY17. Incentive programs is at $1 million. And my colleagues will give a little bit more detail about that as we move through the language of the bill. And that's the case for a lot of these. And then the economic education grants was Representative Cresha's bill at $250,000 annually. So that was the big chunk that was in education excellence. If you turn to page 3, at the very top on mine, it says line 115. This is the Metro Deaf provision to allow for preschool entrance at Metro Deaf. So that was a $69,000 cost, and that was also recommended by the governor. Line 138, the broadband innovation grants. This was Representative Cresha's proposal, and that's at $7 million for FY17. And a lot of the, and I should say, and you'll know, and we'll probably talk about it as we move through the bill language too, a lot of these have are appropriated in FY17, but do have eligibility to spend it into fiscal 18 and 19. So it doesn't all have to be spent just in FY17, but we'll get to the particulars of that as we move through the bill language. And then on line 139, you'll see the maximum effort loan repayment incentive. This was Representative or Chair Loon's bill, and this would involve allowing a number of districts that have capital loans to be able to repay their state portion of the loan, and this would in turn lower the general fund spending, because currently the general fund pays the debt service on the bonds for these, but because of the one-time payments from those districts repaying their loans, it reduces the general fund spending, and so it will increase, or it's a savings that we are able to capture to provide the other spending in the bill. I think that's it for the rest of page 3. Page 4, at the top, the first one is the statewide early childhood rating system, or sometimes referred to as Parent Aware, that is recommended to have an additional $2 million increase for FY17. Line 178, the parent-child home program, that's also Representative Loon's bill, and that is an additional $2 million. And finally, in that section, the St. Cloud Early Pilot, Early Education Learning Pilot Program, Chair Knobloch's bill as a one-time funding of $430,000. And then two more on this page. On line 200, the ABE grant, that's a one-time grant of $400,000. And a GED test that was also recommended by the governor at $120,000 for FY17. The next section is the state agency budgets. The House's bill proposes to not much change here. There is a sections line 219 through 221 that refer to a special revenue fund. And for the time being, I'm going to skip over that, because I'll talk about that in more detail on the next page in terms of how the mechanics of the funding work. But in terms of changes from base, the House is recommending to discontinue the Regional Centers of Excellence program at $1 million. So that would be a $1 million savings towards the target. And then on line 229, there's a MDE fiscal note compliance of about $65,000. On the next page, then, on page 5, you'll see, if you look at lines 269 about the education finance general fund appropriations, you'll see it's $1,686,000. That's the net spending of all of the items contained above the maximum effort savings, plus all of the proposed grants and funding that we've that the House proposes. But there's a couple more steps that we need to get to be able to get to our bottom line target of zero, and that it starts in the section that's called revenues or transfers. This is not typical for our committee to have to deal with revenues. Usually we're just dealing with expenditures. Did someone question? Sorry. It's not typical for our committee to have expenditures, but so this is kind of an unusual case, but there's a couple of pieces that are in here that relate to that, and they start on lines 277, 278, 279 in this area. Typically, when we teachers apply for a license, they would pay their fees to the state, and those fees would go into the general fund, so they were non-dedicated. And at the and on the other end, in terms of administering the teacher licensing program, the traditionally in the past, the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators have received their funding through a rider within the Department of Education's budget. This proposal is recommending that we, instead of having that fund flow through the general fund, to have the revenue, the licensing fees flow to a educator licensure special revenue fund account. And so you'll see on lines 277 and 278 that that is a reduction of revenues to the general fund, because those will be those fees will now be directed to the special revenue fund for educator licensing. And but the net effect that is contemplated for this is that the impact will be zero to the general fund. So the next couple of lines will get us to that point. On line 279, you will see there's a general fund savings for having the Board of Teaching and Board of School Administrators funded through that special revenue fund. So instead of having it funded through the Department of Ed's budget and the rider, these two organizations will be directly appropriated out of that educator licensure special revenue fund. So that's the 949. And then because there is projected to be a balance in the special revenue fund, and we don't want to have a case where the general fund loses money in this transaction, we are proposing that the proposed balance be forwarded to the Department of Education for licensing, other licensing activities, administration, and things like that, so that they would, and then that would be a direct offset on their general fund appropriation for their operating. So, but the net effect is to have no general fund impact and to get to zero. And then on lines 282, they'll see the House had Representative Loon had a proposal to cancel an appropriation that was originally put forward in 2013 for an online IEP. And at the end of last biennium, the department was transferred that to a minute account or an Odyssey fund account to continue that work. And this bill proposes that we cancel that and bring that back into the general fund at 1.686. And so you'll see that that's the balance to the net general fund balance is 1.686. So, but to get to our actual bottom line target, then we need to take our general fund appropriations on line 294 and adjust for the general fund rate gain of 1.686. And so the net impact for our target then on line 298 is then zero. And then on the last page, I know this is a lot, but on the last page, I just give you more of the mechanics of how the educator licensure special revenue funds will flow. As I mentioned, instead of going to the general fund, now these funds will flow to the educator licensure account, so those revenues will flow in there. And also the ability to spend the licensure via portfolio fees are in there, and those total to $1.925 million for the biennium. But then on the opposite, or on the other end of the equation with appropriations or expenditures, the Board of Teaching will now be appropriated directly $518,000 for their operations out of this fund. The Board of School Administrators will be appropriated $231,000. And then, again, as I referenced above, the transfer to the Department for Licensure Activities of $916,000. And then, so that again gets to a bottom line appropriation of appropriation change of 1.925 over the biennium. So there's a net zero impact to that special revenue fund and to the general fund. So, any questions?
All right. Any questions for Ms. Johnson? And if one occurs to you later, we will certainly feel free to ask as we go along. All right. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, the document we're going to be working off today is A16-1062. That's the language of the Delete All Amendment. and the bill summary corresponding to that should be in your folders. I'll speak to Articles 1, 5, 6, 8, and 9, and Ms. Larson will speak to the other articles in the bill. I'll try to not take too long with each of these provisions, Madam Chair. If happy to answer questions. In Article 1, this is the article that corresponds to general education. The first provision is simply the clarification that on the cooperative units that they do include the certain special education cooperatives. Article 1, Section 2 is the reallocation of general education revenue that we heard about a few days ago. Ms. Johnson just mentioned that the operating capital levy is adjusted a little bit. That's in Section 3 of the bill. That's to keep the Glenville-Emmons provision from having a property tax impact. Section 4 is accompanied by the printout Sections 4 and 13. These are Representative Baker's bill from last year regarding equity revenue and applies the same 25% bump in equity funding that currently goes to the metro area districts to all districts in the state. Section 5 is the compensatory revenue provisions that we talked about a few days ago, adding two items to the list of eligible compensatory uses. And then Section 6 is the set-aside, which the change last year pushed up to 50% at the discretion of the school board. And this bill essentially makes that 100% at the discretion of the school board. Section 7 is just a corresponding change to that in regard to how the site team's recommendations should be considered. Section 8 is just a technical clarification from the department to give them just a little extra time in preparing their disparity revenue report so that they can use forecast data from the November forecast and have a slightly more meaningful report for us. Section 9 is the provision that allows, makes permanent the authority for school districts to transfer money among accounts or funds. That authority was temporary through 2017 under current law. This provision makes that authority permanent. Section 10 is the first of several appropriations provisions from last year that you'll see amended. One word of caution as you're looking at these, two things go on in most of the appropriations that are in the bill. New money is added, and then the appropriation itself is adjusted for the baseline changes in the forecast. So this means, for example, on this provision, you're going to see a different base, and then the amounts for Glenville Evans and the amount for the equity adjustment are added to this number as well. But they're not simply additive because of those forecast base adjustments, and much, much easier for you to look at Ms. Johnson's spreadsheet to follow the change in funding and, as opposed to trying to back into it on the amended appropriations, which reflect forecast adjustments. Section 11 was Representative Marquardt's bill on the adjustment of the Moorhead and Dilworth-Glendon-Felton boundaries. Section 12 was the bill you heard just last week from Representative Bennett regarding the Glenville-Emmons School District and the mistake on their referendum ballot date where it should have been fiscal 17 instead of the payable year 2017. Section 13, as Ms. Johnson mentioned, is for fiscal year 17 so that there's not a levy impact for paid 16, which is already passed. The full amount of the equity revenue is paid as an aid, of the increase is paid as an aid for fiscal year 17. And then finally, Section 14, simply a revisor's instruction to codify the fund transfer authority. Madam Chair, that's a quick summary of Article 1.
Any specific questions on Article 1? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to Article 2.
Madam Chair, members, Article 2 is the article on education excellence, and I will try to go through this briefly, but would be glad to answer questions. Section 1 is a bill that Representative Qualm introduced, House File 1712, on school crisis response. Teams. Section 2 and four other sections in this article are from a bill that Representative Detmer introduced, House File 498, proposing to codify and clarify state physical education standards. In Section 2, there is an exemption to allow children to be excused from physical education class. Section 3 is one of the many provisions from House File 3066, which was Representative Erickson's policy bill, and in which she included many, many of the department technical and clarifying amendments. Section 3 is a provision that Representative Erickson proposed, and that is to suggest that Constitution Day and Citizenship Day be used in part to perhaps observe the system of American government through a civics test. Section 4 is another one of the Detmer provisions from House File 498 on physical education, as is Section 5 and Section 6. Section 7 is from the department, and this was a technical provision to address NAEP, which was an inconsistent measure under the World's Best Workforce. Section 8 is from the department. It was in part technical and also an effort to begin to address the new changes in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act having to do with equitable distribution of teachers. Section 9 is again from the department. It was in House File 3066 and it is in response to the ESSA. Section 10 came from the department. It's an effort to reorganize a lot of the reports so that they are structured in the context of the world's best workforce. Section 11 is one of three sections in this article that Representative Bennett authored. It's House File 1392. This provision, not in this form, was in House File 3066. In addition, in paragraph E, there's clarification about state funding related to college entrance exam fees. It says to the extent that funding is available, the districts may use state funds to pay for the fees. Language saying that students must be able to take the exam at the student's high school have been stricken. In this version of Representative Bennett's bill, there is a direction to the Chancellor of MNSCU to review and confirm that the benchmarks that the Commissioner of Education has established are a reflection of career and college readiness for students who take the MCAs. Section 12 is from a bill, All Kids Count. Representative Moran authored that, House File 3042. There are several sections of the bill in this article. The focus of the proposal is to disaggregate various categories of student data to better appreciate better understand student outcomes. Section 13 is a combination of both provisions from MDE making changes to reflect the ESSA as well as Representative Moran's bill on All Kids Count. So you will see not only technical changes referring to federal expectations instead of AYP, but then you will also see a listing of student categories to be considered in the context of the various statewide accountability measures. Section 14, again, is a combination of both House File 3066 with MDE changes as well as changes proposed by Representative Moran and House File 3042, including to count, as an example, English learners enrolled in public schools who either are currently or were previously counted as English learners. There are many other similar kinds of provisions related to data on students. Section 15 is a bill from Representative Loon. Chair Loon mentioned this in her overview. It's House File 3679. This particular provision has to do with reports on physical assaults by students on teachers. The next section, required policy, is also from Representative Loon's bill, 3679. This has to do with the recognition of teachers' authority for controlling and managing student behavior in the classroom. The next section, again, from Representative Loon's House File 3679, requires that, or asserts teachers' legitimate interest in knowing when violent students are placed in a teacher's classroom, and that would include information about documented physical assaults of an employee by a student. The next section on the Board of Teaching is a provision by both Representatives Loon and Erickson. It's a clarification to say that school administrators need not be currently teaching teachers to represent the school administrator position on the Board of Teaching. The next section on Board of Teaching, again, is a provision offered by Representatives Loon and Erickson to clarify the duties and responsibilities of the Board of Teaching. Section on permissions is a provision that Representative Erickson offered. It was in House File 3066. It allows the Board of Teaching to grant a waiver so that individuals holding a full Montessori credential would be able to teach in a district or charter school. This provision or this permission is finite in that it would extend through the 2018-2019 school year. Highly qualified teachers is from House File 3066, which was an MDE provision. The next section, again, is from MDE. There is a clarification about technical education instruction. This was from House File 3066. The language would have expired, and the expiration date is now stricken in this bill. The next section on negotiated unrequested leaves of absence would require a school board and the exclusive bargaining representative of the teachers to negotiate an unrequested leave of absence plan. This is a proposal from Representative Loon, as is the next section, which provides the same direction to teachers in first-class city school districts. There are a number of sections that follow that are corrections requested by MDE in 3066. The reference to highly qualified has been stricken in a number of places, including in this section. There are four sections on the alternative teacher professional pay system. They are technical rather than refer to an educational improvement plan. The references change to the world's best workforce, and there are also repealers at the end of this article to repeal the section establishing the educational improvement plan so that the world's best workforce plan is the prevailing plan. And then with respect to general control of schools, this again is a one of the sections from Representative Loon's Bill 3679 on teachers and student discipline. This establishes that the teacher of record who has control of the classroom is able to remove students from class for violent or disruptive conduct. The staff development report, this comes from MDE. It was in 3066, and this is again one of those themes of consolidating reporting under the world's best workforce. The center functions proposal was from MDE. It's technical. The full service community school program was from MDE. It is technical. The English learner data is the last of the sections from Representative Moran's bill, House File 3042, All Kids Count. And this, again, is pertaining to English learner data and specifically requires that for educational accountability purposes, all pupils enrolled in a public school who are or were counted as English learners become part of the data set. There's a technical change having to do with American Indian schools, then a list of pre-kindergarten through grade 12 parental rights coded elsewhere. This was in House File 3066 and also a bill of Representative Erickson. There's a clarification here to say that many but not all of the sections governing parental rights are listed, And in addition, there was some concern about language having to do with the charter school transportation in subdivision 22, and that has been clarified, and the cross-reference is to language establishing parents' rights with respect to transportation in 120B88.
Madam Chair, could we have...
Could
we have each of them say the section they're going to as they start each section?
Thank you, yes. Ms. Larson, as you're resuming, if you could just say which section you're referencing.
It's 38.
Yeah.
38, right?
Yeah, you're now at section 38.
38, yes. Madam Chair, I'd be glad to do that.
Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Yeah. So section 38 having to do with survey of districts. This is an amendment that Representative Mariani offered to House File 3066. It is requiring that when the commissioner performs the biannual survey of teacher shortages, that a component of that survey include effective and more diverse teachers. Section 39, it's a student survey. That's from House File 3066. It was an Erickson provision. Section 40 is our technical changes. They were proposed by the department from House File 3066. Okay, Section 41 is one of three sections in this article from Representative Ward's bill 3627, which was also in House File 3066. It addresses circumstances at the Perfect Center for Arts Education. This section has to do with the board composition and the appointment of board members. The second of the three sections from the Representative Ward bill that was in the policy bill is Section 42. This addresses notice with respect to board matters as well as finance. Section 43 is the second of the now three sections from the initial proposal from Representative Bennett, House File 1392, to clarify when students are exempt from the requirement of remedial course taking at MNSCU. This provision requires state colleges and universities to post notice of the exemption when a student receives a college-ready ACT score. Section 44, which is the last of the Bennett provisions, requires the MNSCU institutions to exempt or not require individuals who meet a career and college-ready MCA benchmark to take remedial instruction. Section 45 is the last of the Detmer provisions. The original proposal on physical education standards appears in session law. The proposal that Representative Detmer is making is that beginning in the 2021 school year, the physical education standards will be part of the review and revision cycle. And what this has the effect of doing is to indicate that the session law remains in effect until the review and the revise and review cycle becomes effective in 2021. Section 46 was in Representative Erickson's bill. It originated in a bill that Representative Peterson offered, 2890. Representative Erickson revised it. It results from what was originally a pilot project. It allows school districts to form partnerships to undertake, in this proposal, programs that would lead to industry certification and other credentials. Section 47 is from a Bennett proposal on the a teacher shortage loan forgiveness, which was enacted last year. Section 48 is from Representative Howes, House File 2981. It calls for an adjustment in alternative compensation. Section 49 is a proposal from Representative Bennett, House File 2449, on Reading Corps appropriation. Section 50 is a bill from Representative Fenton, House File 3340, increasing the appropriation for Q, the Collaborative Urban Educator Program. Section 51 is part of a proposal from Representative Christensen, House File 3013. Section 51 is one of several proposals having to do with concurrent enrollment and allowing teachers to receive the training necessary to meet the requirements for serving as a concurrent enrollment teacher. Section 53, Minnesota's Future Teachers Grant Program. That is a proposal from the governor. It's been amended slightly here, but it was from 3513 or 35. Thirty-five, fifty-eight. That's why I'm not the fiscal analyst. Then, Madam Chair, members, Section 54, grants to student teachers in shortage areas. This was also a proposal from the governor. It's been amended to remove the requirement of 5 years of service in exchange for receiving a student teaching stipend. The next section, 55, is a legislative study group on educator licensure. It was in House File 3066. Both Representatives Erickson and Mariani introduced similar bills on this topic. Madam Chair, members, Section 56, the Board of Teaching Report. This is the second of the two sections that was part of Representative Erickson's proposal on the legislative study group to look at teacher licensure. The teacher licensing process and procedures, Section 57, is a proposal by Representatives Loon and Erickson to make a number of changes that were raised in the legislative auditor's report, including an online teacher licensure application system that would be accessible and user-friendly, as well as in notifying candidates when a license is either denied or restricted, and allows for a one-year full professional teaching license while individuals try to complete testing and other, content, pedagogy, and skills exams. Section 58, Data Security Plan. This was a bill that Representative Erickson introduced. It was in House File 3066. It's a direction to the department to develop a data security plan. And the department, according to testimony, is well on its way in doing exactly that. Madam Chair, members, Section 59, the staff development grants. This is a bill from Representative Loon, House File 2937. The student discipline working group, Section 60, is a proposal from Representative Christensen, House File 3133. The number of participants has grown, I believe, since the bill was introduced, but conceptually it's what was in House File 3313. Madam Chair, members, Section 61, the Northwest Regional Partnership Concurrent Enrollment Program. Again, this is another one of the proposals to address enabling teachers to acquire the education needed to become concurrent enrollment teachers. I believe this was from Representative Nornes, House File 3326. It specifically addresses the Lake County Service Cooperative in consultation with the Northwest Service Cooperative. Madam Chair, members, Section 62, Grow Your Own Teacher Residency Pilot Program. This is a bill that Representative Fenton introduced, House File 2805. Her bill addressed first-class city school districts only. The language in this particular section has been expanded to include districts beyond the first-class city school districts. Section 63, the pilot project to help struggling students read at grade level, is a bill that Representative Seltzer introduced, House File 3332. Madam Chair, members, the legislative auditor language in Section 64 is the third of the three provisions from Representative Ward's Bill 3627 to try to address issues raised concerning the Perpich Center for Arts Education. This is a direction to the legislative auditor to perform financial audits at least every 4 years. Section 65, the job board for teachers and administrators, is part of a teacher shortage bill that Representative Erickson introduced, House File 3132. The certification incentive revenue in Section 66 is a proposal from Representative Loon. The appropriations are covered in Ms. Johnson's fiscal sheet. And then, Madam Chair, members, Section 68 is the funding for the jobs board that was proposed in Representative Erickson's Bill 3132. The Future Teachers Grant Program is a governor's proposal. The language is in earlier in Article 2. We covered that. The student teacher shortage areas, that's also from the governor. That's Section 70. The Section 71, the School Link Mental Health Services, is a proposal from Representative Dabney, House File 2731. Section 72, the revisor's instruction, is from the Peterson and Erickson proposal on innovation zones, and it asked the revisor of statutes to codify the innovation zone language so that in subsequent editions of the statutes, it can be found there as opposed to in session law. The repealers are a combination of basically three things: a number of department proposals having to do with the with changing over in the teacher professional alternative plans to the World's Best Workforce Plan. There is a repeal of the Principals Academy. There is funding in the 2015 bill for this same purpose. And then with respect to the negotiated unrequested leaves of absence, the statutory provisions related to unrequested leaves of absence are repealed here. And Madam Chair, that's an overview of Article 2.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Any questions for Ms. Larson at this time? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair,
Representative Murphy, can you move your microphone down a little?
Yes.
There, thank you.
Since the Detmer bill was so pulled apart in various sections, could I have a description of what physical education standards we have or requirements we will have that we don't have already?
Madam Chair.
What we've asked is that we adopt the national standards, and that's basically what we're doing with that.
And does that, Representative Detmer, does that then require physical education for all students?
Representative Detmer.
I'm trying to think. Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
For all years, all the time? Or is there some... Is there some years they don't have physical education, or they don't?
We're leaving that up to the local schools to develop their own curriculum. But the standards will be there, the national standards for the local school districts to use.
And so the Minnesota, Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, so the Minnesota standards will be the national standards that are all kids nationwide have.
Madam Chair, that's correct, because we did not have any standards. Minnesota did not have any standards.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about, in your opening remarks, you talked about collective bargaining, left up to the local collective bargaining groups, and then there was a two or three sections that referenced unrequested leaves and so forth. Could that be clarified for me? Is the collective bargaining going to, each school district have their own collective bargaining plan developed for unrequested leave?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, the proposal is to have individual school districts negotiate an unrequested leave of absence plan.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Murphy,
Ms. Larson, and then every school district will have a plan in place, and does that have to be submitted?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, it needs to be negotiated.
Okay. And then once it's negotiated, that's the standard for the, that's what's to be followed for the local school district.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. And then could I have more summary of what the parental rights changes are in this legislation, in this section? I mean, in this article?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, Representative Erickson introduced a bill listing about almost 30 examples of statutory provisions on parental rights. One of the provisions having to do with transportation raised some questions for the charter school stakeholders about whether, in fact, the statement regarding transportation was entirely correct. And so what we've done is to change the explanation so that there is no ambiguity. And we've also added language to say that this is an illustrative list, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not a doesn't represent the idea that it is a list of every possible provision. It's just a guide. It has many provisions in it, but not necessarily every provision in statutes pertaining to parents' rights in the context of education.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I have a more complete definition or description or of the changes in the loan forgiveness program?
Ms. Larson.
I didn't even get that section.
Or Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's just adding additional money. There's no change to the conditions of the program under the loan forgiveness program.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Can I be refreshed on the amount of money that we're including then, adding to the loan forgiveness program?
Mr. Madam Strong. Chair, members, this is in Section 47 on page 50 of your bill. The provision that passed in the higher education bill last year had $200,000 per year. This bill is adding an additional $1 million in 2017.
And, Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, about how many more additional people will receive loan forgivenesses then?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I'll get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, do we have an idea of how many work groups or study groups or similar groups are contained in this section or in this bill?
I think I know, but I'm going to defer to nonpartisan staff so I don't give the wrong answer.
I picked up two, I think, and is there... I thought there was maybe one more, but I...
Yeah, I think there's one legislative study group, and that's on teacher licensure, and then a larger working group on the discipline working group. And I'm seeing nods, right? So two, I believe.
And was that the, Madam Chair, was the discipline one, the study group?
The legislative study group is the licensure one. And I'm not sure exactly if I'm categorizing this correctly, but the larger study group with the really long list of proposed participants in that is the discipline working group.
And, Madam Chair,
Representative,
I got the one pilot. Is there more than one pilot in the appropriations? The one pilot was for $100,000, I think, for Representative Seltzer's bill.
Oh, for the walk and read.
Yeah. Are there any more pilots?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, there are a number of provisions in this bill that are essentially one time, often with the money being able to be expended over the next 3 years. So it may depend a little bit on your definition of what a pilot program is. To the extent that it's got that in the title, we could count those. But a number of other provisions that are one time may be seen essentially, particularly if there's a reporting element to them, to require recommendations back, which in some ways I think would be a sign that folks may want to continue those. So we'll make a count of those for you and let you determine which ones really are a pilot or not. But I think you'll find that there's more than one there that meet the criteria of having a report back and having funding on a one-time basis.
Correct. I think, Representative Murphy, I know that the preschool program for English language learners in St. Cloud, that's a pilot program. So we'll go through and make a list and send out to all the members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then could I have greater clarification on the costs of the job board? I remember when we heard about the job board, and it was the Board of Teaching, it was going to be at the Board of Teaching, and I thought it was a cost of $80,000, but it's $200 and something in here, and Ms. Nyman, when we were talking about it earlier, had a larger, I thought, larger number. So what are we getting for our 200 and whatever?
Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, it's my understanding that this is encompassing three years worth of it. It's about $79,000 a year, but just kind of putting it all in FY17, with the understanding that it will be built out over time and there's an expectation of long-term funding.
Okay. But it's basically what Ms. Dietrich was talking about. Okay.
Representative Murphy.
That exhausts my list. But now we're on to a new section, our new article, aren't we?
It was a good list, Representative Murphy. All right, Representative Dabney, you had your hand up and they wrote you down?
I can hold, Madam Chair. I apologize. Coming in, it's not fair to anybody.
It's all right. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm on Section 73, page 69. So these are the three appealers. And without getting into any debate about them at this point, I just want to know, on the Principal's Academy repealer, is the repealing here a function of a technical issue having to do with we funded it one time and it no longer exists, or is this a pure policy decision to repeal this provision?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, there's an existing funding line that is separate from the statutory language You may want to ask the authors as well, but in my view, the statutory language authorized something broader than the existing funding is funding. So I wouldn't consider that a technical change to repeal that program, although the funding is not going out under that statutory section right now. So one might consider that a dormant piece of statutory language. But I wouldn't, in my view, that doesn't meet the definition of technical.
Representative, we'll have opportunities during the markup to be able to have a fuller discussion of those, but I just wanted to clarify in my mind whether this is a purely a technical function or a proactive policy. I do have several other questions, but I think it's probably better best left until we do our markup.
All right.
Thank you.
Other questions right now on Article 2? And again, you don't lose your chance to ask a question. We'll come back later if you want to wait. All right, let's move on to Article 3. Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, members, Article 3 covers charter schools. It's a combination of a number of bills, but primarily House File 3066 from Representative Erickson. Sections 1 and 2, which were in House File 3066, came from Representative Barrett. They have to do with authorizers, application, as well as how a school district authorizer satisfies certain requirements as an authorizer. Sections 3, 4, 5, and 6 were in House File 3066 and MDE provisions. Section 7 came from Representative Carlson, House File 3240. It has to do with cash flow adjustment. And Section 8 is a proposal both from Representative Wills as well as for the governor with respect to the charter school for the deaf. And this would allow, there is also $69,000 in funding made available for this purpose. And that's the, those are the provisions in Article 3.
Any questions on Article 3? All right, seeing none, Article 4. Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, members, Article 4 covers special education. Again, there are provisions from a number of members, but primarily these provisions came from the department and were in Representative Erickson's policy bill, House File 3036. So, for example, Sections 1, 2, 3, 4 were all from MDE. Section 5 is conceptually from a proposal by Representative Christensen, which was House File 804. It has to do with the student information system and requiring that such systems be compliant. Section 6 and 7, 8, and 9 were also from the department and carried in Representative Erickson's Bill 3066. Section 10 is a combination of both the Metro Deaf proposal from Representative Wills as well as from Representative Loon. So it's both a forecast adjustment as well as an addition of $69,000 for the Metro Deaf. Section 11 is a proposal from Representative Slocum, House File 3500, to try to reduce the amount of paperwork burden on teachers. Section 12 is a special education cancellation. This is a proposal from Representative Loon. She introduced House File 2902 on this topic. And that, Madam Chair, is Article 4.
Questions on Article 4? All right, Article 5. Mr. Strom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Article 5 is the facilities article of the bill. There's just about a dozen or so provisions here. The majority of these provisions have to do with the creation last year of the long-term facilities maintenance revenue program. Essentially, that program eliminated the need for the health and safety program and replaced it with ongoing per-pupil amounts of funding for districts across the state. As a result of that change, though, there were a number of provisions where references are made to health and safety revenue that needed to be clarified, and as a part of cleaning up those portions of the statute, other cross-references and things were noticed that should have been fixed some time ago. So sections 1 through all the way through I suppose we could go all the way through 12 here, at least get me across the page. Sections 1 through 12 are all from 3066 and all clarify the treatment of long-term facilities maintenance revenue. There shouldn't be any change in the revenue districts received because of that. It simply clarifies the process, and perhaps the biggest noticeable difference will be that the long-term facilities maintenance plan will cover things that otherwise would have fallen under the review and comment, and this is section 11 in particular, and that one is probably the biggest change that will simplify matters for school districts, but the rest of those changes essentially are technical in nature and adjusting for health and safety being replaced by the long-term facilities maintenance program. Then starting on sections 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 all do the same thing as well and are all tied into that package. Section 18 is the capital loan maximum effort program provision. What this provision does is it's a voluntary provision that allows those school districts that still have outstanding balances for their maximum effort loans to refinance their local share and the state share that they owe and repay the state. This bill was a bill heard in committee a little bit ago. The provisions are voluntary. A district's not required to refinance its loan, but may choose to do so. As Ms. Johnson said, the fiscal note expects that most districts with outstanding capital loans will refinance, and the estimated savings to the state is about $52 million. That savings goes essentially into the state's repayment fund for bonded debt, as this will all be payments into that. And that's where the savings, the majority of the savings in this bill come from. There'll be for questions on the individual districts, probably easiest and best to refer to the fiscal note, which provided a fair amount of detail. I believe that was 3043. And so for members interested in individual district detail, that's all laid out pretty extensively in the fiscal note. But again, it's voluntary. A district's not required to refinance its capital loan. If it does refinance, it needs to do so on a fairly quick timeline so that it can resubmit its payments by the, November 30th, 2016 is when it needs to wrap up in order to get those payments in fiscal year 17 still. Then section 19 is a provision that creates a matching grant program. And this is keyed with the appropriation that follows it in section 20 for broadband expansion. Essentially, what the program does is allow districts grants of up to $100,000 if the districts are working alone, or up to $200,000 if the district submits a plan with a cooperatively with another unit of local government, a library or a nonprofit perhaps, or other local provider. Portion of the bill essentially sets the overall grant amounts. The grant is to expand access to broadband. Representative Kreisha may want to speak more to this provision as well. But then you can see in the appropriation section just following that there's a total of $7 million appropriated for this program. $5 million of that is essentially to expand access to existing systems, and $2 million is for grants to build up broadband capacity. Section 20.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since the entire budget is based on that early repayment of the loan, are we absolutely certain that it's going to be repaid by November?
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, we work off the fiscal note concept here as part of our budgeting practices, and when a fiscal note comes in for a particular provision, that's what we key off of. I know the Department of Management and Budget worked closely with the Department of Education to develop that fiscal note. So that's the estimate we're using. Whether all districts that are in the note or not choose to do so, I'm not privy to any information one way or the other. But the fiscal note is usually our basis here. If it's something that Ms. Johnson and myself can't estimate on our own, the fiscal note is what we rely on to determine how much revenue or savings there might be from any particular provision.
Thank you.
Thank you. And actually, Representative Crisha, did you want to talk about the broadband provisions? Are there any specific questions, or we can come back to it after we finish the walkthrough? Okay.
Okay, and Madam Chair, members, the last provision were two repealers that were part of the overall cleaning up of health and safety and replacing it with long-term facilities aid. That's it for Article 5. Madam Chair, members, the next article, Article 6, is early childhood education programs. And most of the programs in this article are from one of your bills, House File 3522 and 3523. Let me quickly run through what those provisions are for members. Sections 1 through 6 all deal with integrating and coordinating the early learning programs. These six sections essentially allow a school district, after recommendation from its community ed and early childhood councils, to combine into one program, to coordinate in one program its ECFE and school readiness activities. There's language that requires that whatever the integrated combined program looks like must continue to have parent education, early childhood, and school readiness activities in it. But these six sections essentially would allow a district at its choosing, after hearing from its advisory councils, to coordinate those programs. Sections starting on section 8, Section 7, Madam Chair, the next couple of provisions are from your bill that allows a charter school to participate in the school readiness program, provided that the entitlement for the school readiness program is increased. And similar to the bill we heard earlier, at about the $3 million level of additional entitlement in school readiness, the charter schools would be funded at exactly the same level as school districts. The way the provision works in Section 9 of the bill is that until that entitlement is raised by the full $3 million, the new money is essentially put into bringing charter schools up to that level. And then once that $3 million level is reached, once the aid entitlement is at $36 million or thereabouts, then the charter schools and the school districts would be using the same formula for generating the school readiness aid. Section 10 and 11 both tie back to the earlier sections regarding the integrated or coordinated early learning programs. Section 12 is House File 2060 that Representative Crisha brought to the committee. This has to do with the Early Learning Scholarship Program and makes a few changes to that program. In Section 12, essentially allows priority and grants scholarship authority for children of any age up through age 5 if those children are in foster care or otherwise in need of protective services, or if the child's family has experienced homelessness. This provision also has a second change that would allow the Commissioner of Education to award a scholarship amount higher than the amount that the Child Care Market Rate Survey currently has to a child that fits one of those earlier conditions. Right now, the Commissioner has set the maximum scholarship amount at $7,500. Section 13 is the parent-child home program that Representatives Loon and Seltzer brought to the committee. This increases the appropriation from last year by $2 million for fiscal year 17, and is one of several provisions where the increase is directed to be spent over the next three fiscal years. As Ms. Johnson mentioned, Section 14, the quality rating system, is the procedure whereby early learning scholarship programs receive their ratings, and for technical assistance and additional program rating, an additional $1.825 million is added to the bill, and there's some rider language in the appropriation directing the increase to be used as much as possible for underserved and low-income neighborhoods. And then finally, Madam Chair, as Ms. Johnson mentioned, Section 15 is, oops, and we've got a misspelling, St. Cloud has replaced St. Cloud on the bill summary. St. Cloud will be able to become St. Cloud by adding $430,000 to them for an early learning preschool program. So, Madam Chair, that's Section 6 in a table.
Beneficial exercise. Thank you, Mr. Somm. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Ms. Madam Chair. Representative Krishat talked to me on the way down to this meeting and said that Head Start, the conflict with Head Start, would be much improved, and I would like to him to comment on that in this article.
Representative Krishat.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Thank you. I said we're working on it. We're still in negotiations with that. I do have a meeting today with the Department of Ed and some other groups, and we're trying to come to agreement on that so I can get possible language in there. So I haven't forgotten about it.
Other questions? All right, next article. Article 7.
Madam Chair, members. Oh, go ahead, Ms. Larson.
Thank you. Ms. Larson.
Kidding. G'day. Ahead of myself.
Madam Chair, members, Article 7, the self-sufficiency and lifelong learning article, was in fact Article 6 in Representative Erickson's policy bill, House File 3066. The first two provisions were proposed by the department. They are clarifying language relating to adult basic education programs. The next two sections pertain to the GED program. These were suggested by the governor, and Section 5 contains the appropriations for this article.
Any questions on Article 7? All right, Article 8.
Madam Chair, members, Article 8 is the state agency article that starts on page 107 of your bill and page 22 of your bill summary. As Ms. Johnson mentioned, the majority of the changes in this article are designed to move the Board of School Administrators and the Board of Teaching off of general fund revenue and instead have them funded from a special revenue account that the teacher licensure and administrator license fees are paid into. So the concept is essentially that a separate revenue fund is created when a teacher renews her license or an administrator renews her license. The amounts are sent into the special revenue fund, and then an appropriation is made out of that fund each year for the Board of School Administrators and the Board of Teaching. So it's probably more helpful to think about it conceptually, and then we can talk about what each of these individual provisions say. Section 1 is the Board of School Administrators provision, and that essentially requires the head of the Board of the School Administrators to deposit the fees she collects into the new educator licensure account. So those will go into the special revenue account instead of into the state general fund. Later in the article, you'll see that money is now appropriated out of that account in the same amount that that board is currently receiving from a general fund appropriation. Section 2, there's a small category of licensure for those with temporary military licenses. This deposits those fees in the new special revenue account as well. Section 3 and 4 deal with background checks. Right now, the background checks are required for teachers and administrators, and those are run essentially by the Bureau of Criminal apprehension, the BCA. And what happens here is now these funds, when a teacher pays the amount for the background check, that goes directly into the special revenue fund, and then there's an appropriation again out of that fund to the BCA for the costs associated with the background check. So sections 3 and 4 have to do with that. Then section 5 is the primary provision for the teacher licensure and requires that all of the renewal and initial applications for licensure, that all of those fees go into a special revenue account. Section 6 is the licensure via portfolio. There's a small amount that's currently goes into the special revenue account for those purposes. And because a couple of times now we have forgotten to appropriate money back out of that, we're making that appropriation open and standing in Section 7. That's a very small amount of money, about $30,000 a year, but in hopes that particular staff like myself don't miss that, we're going to make that open and standing and hope that we won't have to correct that in subsequent years. Then there's two provisions from Representative Howe's bill, sections 8 and 9 having to do with QComp revenue. And as you heard a few weeks ago when that bill was heard, the Department of Education initially notified two districts that they'd be qualifying for QComp revenue, and then because of a mix-up in the way some charter school QComp revenue was considered, we're told that they weren't going to qualify for fiscal year 16. These two provisions, sections 8 and 9, establish a process for essentially to require the commissioner to pay once they've notified districts that they're eligible. Section 9 is a particular statute we have that deals with errors in distribution, and this is coupled by a third provision later in the agency budget that essentially says if the commissioner can't fix it under either Section 8 or Section 9, that the commissioner should pay for the QComp amounts out of her agency operating budget. Section 10 is the appropriations for the Department of Education, and there's several moving parts here. It may be good for members as well to look at the language in the bill as we're looking at this. This starts on the top of page 112. As Ms. Johnson mentioned, the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators are only being funded through general fund revenue through fiscal year 16, and then starting in fiscal 17, they'll be funded directly from the special revenue account. So the riders for those two organizations are modified, and the department's budget is adjusted because of the amounts no longer necessary to transfer to those two organizations. As Ms. Johnson mentioned in her overview, on page 112 of the bill, on the third listed rider for the department budget, the regional center budget of $1 million per year is limited to 2016 only. And then the next substantive change not related to the special revenue fund is starting on 112.32 in paragraph G, and this is the third provision of Representative Howe's bill that requires the department to make good on any promises of QComp revenue to school districts. At the top of page 113, there's an additional rider of $65,000 added to the agency budget for compliance activities. And finally, then the base is set in paragraph I for both fiscal 18 and fiscal 19 to reflect the policy changes that were made to the department's budget, as well as the changes for rolling out the Board of School Administrators and the Board of Teaching from the agency's base budget amounts. Section 11 is a final piece of transfer language that completes the transfer of the funds from the general fund to the special revenue fund for the portfolio account and the background checks. And then finally, Madam Chair, in Sections 12 and 13 are the new appropriations in the same dollar amount for the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators from the special revenue fund instead of from the general fund for those boards' respective activities.
Any questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, does these appropriations to the Board of Teaching, school boards, administrators, but mostly I'm talking about the Board of Teaching then, Does the language in the bill give the Board of Teaching autonomy? Or, and do we separate them from the MDE?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I would say that the change here is clarifying where the money is coming from the appropriation, but does not address the issue of teacher licensure functions that are currently performed by MDE versus those teacher licensure functions currently done by the Board of Teaching. In the appropriation here, it's making the funding streams more apparent and making a direct appropriation, but it's not making the agent, it's not changing employees or agency employees and making those Board of a Teaching employees, nor is it moving functions back or forth between the Board of Teaching or the department.
Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, then, but the all questions that or discussion about the portfolio and that kind of thing of why that wasn't done and the costs of the portfolio and the all that stuff should be gone then with the language and the appropriation language that's in this bill today.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Chair. Murphy, in Article 2, there's a provision regarding the task force working group to look at the Board of Teaching and the MDE's relationship. Nothing in this article changes the amount of the fees that are paid into the for portfolio licensure, but what this bill does correct is the oversight that of my mistake last year of not appropriating the Board of Teaching's portfolio fees back out to the Board of Teaching. But that's just, that was sort of a technical provision appropriating that amount back out. So it doesn't affect the amount that they're charging for the fee. It doesn't change the fee schedule. It just changes how that money gets out of that account, so it automatically comes out of that account for those purposes.
And then, Madam Chair, we should be more patient then and wait for the study that's going to be done in Article 2.
Representative Murphy, I think for many of the recommendations and things to consider from the OLA report, yes, that would be the legislative study group. There is a little clarification language, and I'll call on Ms. Larson to refresh us all from Article 2 about kind of the relationship a little bit between the Board of Teaching and the licensure and their roles. And Ms. Larson, as she's looking for that, so we did try to take a couple of recommendations from the OLA to clarify where they thought it was not clear in current statute who had responsibilities for what. And when she finds that, I'll have her read that. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, there are three provisions in Article 2 offered by Representatives Loon and Erickson to begin to address the issues raised by the OLA. That is in addition to the legislative study group directed to look at the recommendations in the OLA report and report back to the legislature. The first provision appears in page 29. Of your bill. It's Article 2, Section 19, having to do with the Board of Teaching duties and responsibilities. And what this section states is the following, that the Board of Teaching is responsible for licensing teachers and issuing special permissions and must perform all licensure-related duties and meet all licensure-related responsibilities under Section 122A09. Among other statutory licensure-related requirements. So at the direction of the Board of Teaching, the department may perform administrative functions related to issuing teacher licenses under this proposal. The paragraph ends by saying that to the extent a conflict exists between the language here and another statutory section, the provisions of this particular section prevail. And then, Madam Chair, members, thank you. On page 56 of your bill, there are further proposals from Representatives Loon and Erickson. And these specifically address some of the issues that were raised by stakeholders and the OLA. So in section 57, there are several paragraphs on this point. Paragraph A directs the Board of Teaching to maintain an online teacher licensure application system that is easy for candidates to use. Paragraph B requires the Board of Teaching, after consulting with the department if it's appropriate, to notify candidates when denying or partially denying an application for a license. So if a candidate were not issued a license at all, or a candidate were issued a restricted license, there is an obligation to specifically explain to the candidate why the denial. And then in paragraph C, there is language to direct the Board of Teaching to grant a one-year full professional teaching license, which may be renewed up to three times, to otherwise qualified candidates who have completed everything except successfully passed content pedagogy or skills exam required for licensure. So this is to address both out-of-state teachers as well as in-state teachers who have met almost all the requirements but for those exams. And these proposals are in addition to the work group charged with looking at the OLA recommendations.
Representative Murphy, does that help clarify?
That clarifies. Thank you very much.
Yes. Representative Mariani.
Just on that point, thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious about the language. On line 57.9, so this would be to Ms. Larson, in terms of how we constructed this. 57.8 to 57.9 have not yet successfully completed. Is it the intent here that candidates would have taken but not yet successfully completed, or is the saying not yet successfully completed imply that they've taken it?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, successfully completed might encompass either possibility as you've described it, have not yet taken or have not yet have taken but not yet passed.
And so then,
Representative Mariani.
So then, Madam Chair, to the authors of the language, I guess I would just, we don't have to do it now, but just to clarify what the intent is. Do we want to offer this opportunity for folks who are going through the process but have, you know, not yet been able to get, you know, pass an exam, or do we want them just to not take the exam and pull off for 3 years? I leave it to your wisdom and discretion.
Thank you, Mariani. I appreciate you raising the question. Other questions? All right, then I think we'll go ahead and finish Article 9.
Madam Chair, the last article, Article 9, is the forecast adjustments. Essentially what happens in the K-12 area is the legislature agrees to fully fund each of its programs to the best estimate given by fiscal notes or by the formula-driven amounts. And in return for the legislature not creating a program that's not fully funded, the forecast essentially, when student counts go up or down or other characteristics change, is adjusted to reflect those higher or lower numbers of students or other forecast changes. So it still takes a legislative action for most of the programs in order to adjust them to the actual amount of use. But essentially, the forecast adjustments article is no change over forecast base. It's the it's essentially conforming our appropriations that were made last year to the February 2016 forecast. So as you look through those provisions, some go up, some go down. Those are all related to the change in the underlying forecast of how much the full funding of those programs will be, and there's no policy changes reflected in any of those sections in the forecast adjustments article.
All right, thank you. And so, and that is all of the articles contained in the bill. As we have about 3 minutes left, I think we'll not do testimony, but certainly additional questions from members, if any are. And just a remind for members who may have come in after we started committee, tomorrow's committee time will be devoted to testimony, public testimony. For those in the audience or listening to this, if you wish to testify so we can try to manage the number of testifiers, if you would let the email the committee administrator and let them know that you would like to testify. If we get a huge list, I may have to impose some time limits. just to get in as many comments as we can, but I won't know unless I know how many people indicate a desire to testify. And
yes, we do.
And we do have evening time and room reserved if we need to go into the evening to hear more public testimony. Deadline for filing amendments to the delete all is 5 o'clock tomorrow, Wednesday. So please have those filed by 5 o'clock tomorrow. And I think that's it in terms of announcements. So, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, will you reserve time for questions again at the beginning of the meeting tomorrow if there's questions left over from our personal reviews of the bill and the spreadsheet?
Yes, Representative Murphy. We'd be happy to make sure that members get their questions answered, and we'll try to do that at the beginning. I would say, though, in the meantime, between now and tomorrow, just because I have a feeling we may have a lot of people who wish to testify, please feel free to contact me, contact our committee administrator, our nonpartisan staff, and we'll all try to respond to questions as best we can. And I think I keep wanting to demote you to representative. Mr. Strom perhaps has a response to a question that was asked.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, you asked earlier about the teacher loan forgiveness program in the bill. Our crack fiscal staff in the higher ed area was listening in and has let us know that those amounts, our awards are capped at $1,000, so the extra million would fund essentially 1,000 additional awards.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, is it the intent of the chair to move final passage of the omnibus Thursday, Friday?
Thursday.
Okay.
Thursday.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions? procedure? All right. So with that, members, we will see you tomorrow. And for members of the public, if you wish to testify tomorrow, please contact our committee administrator. Committee is adjourned.